Welcome to the December 2019 Parkinson's Recovery Support Group Gathering. This support group is a positive support group where we are documenting all sorts of wonderful approaches, methods, therapies, and techniques that our members are discovering are making a huge and significant contribution to their ability to find sustained relief from the symptoms that they experience that are associated with the diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. Thank you so much for being a member, for being a part of Parkinson's Recovery, and supporting all of the many, many support services that we offer to our global audience. I have a question from a member that I want to read, and this individual says, I am wondering if you can connect me to anyone with multi-symptom atrophy symptoms that has had any luck in getting movement back. I'm in a rut and I'm not sure how to get out. If you do have those challenges and would be willing to connect with her, please let me know and I will forward your information to her so that we can connect the two of you together. I am conducting, as we speak, the annual Parkinson's Recovery Survey. This survey is conducted over the holiday season, and I ask two very simple questions. The first question is, since the last holiday season, so we're talking about over the course of the previous year, have you been feeling better, the same, or worse? Now, I do this in the holiday season because it is always difficult for everybody to track themselves, myself included. If you ask me, well, how am I doing today relative to 3 months ago? I'm a bit troubled by being able to respond. But if you can give me a specific moment in time, and that is the last holiday season, I can move back and give you a reasonable response. So we're always anchoring the responses to the holiday season. Now, the reason that I ask that very simple question among the two questions that are asked is perhaps obvious. There is this, I believe, to be false belief template that is sizzling out there in the global universe that once a person has a diagnosis of, quote, Parkinson's disease, that they will degenerate. My research has been documented the fact that that is false, that is not true. There are many, many instances of people who are reclaiming their full and complete life force and are succeeding in reversing their symptoms. So this is not, of course, the first time I've conducted this survey, and I do have some preliminary results that I'll report to you. And what I'm actually going to do on the 2nd of January is to provide a much more complete response so that you can get a real full flavor of what people are doing out there that is really helping them be able to get relief from their symptoms. Now, so far, we've only put out one call for responses. We have 62 responses. And the following results are that 11 of the 62 individuals reported that they were better. 29 reported they were about the same, and 20 of the respondents said that they were worse. Now, the argument is that once you have this diagnosis, you will degenerate, period. There's no qualification. The belief is that, well, gosh, you're going to decline about 4 or 5% a year. In fact, I've actually heard medical professionals argue just that. The results of this survey are actually very consistent with the previous holiday surveys that I've conducted. In essence, what we're talking about is two-thirds of the respondents, 66% of the respondents, are reporting that they are either doing just the same, pretty much the same, or they are better. Now, if it is true that, in fact, this condition is degenerative, the results should show that 100%, 62 of the respondents so far, would be reporting they are worse. Now, again, that is not the result. The biggest category is about the same. That's been really confirmed from the previous holiday surveys I've conducted. And remember, what that means is that quite a few of these individuals are actually feeling pretty well. They are, you know, maybe still have some symptoms that are problematic, but all in all, they are living lives that are fully productive and engaging and joyous. So just because they're the same does not mean that they are in a bad state at all. So anyway, the good news is that I've confirmed once again that two-thirds of the individuals that I hear from on this survey report that they are either the same or better. And again, that smacks in the face the false belief that many people hold near and dear to their chest, because they're told by all sorts of healthcare professionals that it's true, that in fact it's not true. It is false. 11 people are better, 29 are about the same, 20 again are not doing as well. Now, the one general comment that I can make about the individuals who report they are doing better is that they are doing multiple therapies. They are have multiple approaches for being able to get relief from their symptoms. So it's not a question of just having one simple solution. By way of just illustrating my point, I've extracted three of the responses from people who reported that they were better in the early responses that actually came through Christmas Eve. And I just want to read what three of the responses have reported is helping them be able to get relief from their symptoms and to be feeling much better. So the first response is the following, and I'm just going to read what they wrote. This is the response to the second question in the survey. What therapies, methods, or approaches are you finding are helping you be able to feel better? So the first respondent says, and again, this is a person who's been feeling better. They say the following, quote, number one, diet, especially gluten and sugar, getting them totally out. Number two, blue-green algae from a company called New Earth out of Klamath Falls, Oregon. The blue-green algae gives the brain the nutrients it is lacking, as well as detoxing. A second response, again, this is from an individual who reports that they have been doing and feeling better. Quote, Feldenkrais, weekly energy practices, four gates, herbs, vegetarian diet, dairy-free, gluten-free, calorie restriction, intermittent fast, over-the-counter antioxidants, 8 hours of sleep every night. And a final extraction that I want to report to you, just by way of illustrating the remarkable differences of what people are reporting have been helping them as therapies to feel better. This particular person says Sinemet, so that's, as I think most of you know, is a medication, and then high-dose B1, that's thiamine, Tai Chi, LSVT, big walking. Now, notice how different those responses are, and that's really very typical of what I see when I look across all of the responses. Everybody has a very different set of ideas of what really is helping them be able to get well and feel better and heal from the inside out. I will, again, report in much more detail the responses to the survey on a new program. I have a new platform that is going to have some video interfaces on Thursday, January the 2nd at 12 noon Pacific time. Be sure to look out for my email that will give you the link to that program. Now, in terms of reports on what's been going on here at Parkinson's Recovery, I have a number of brief announcements that I want to make before connecting in with those of you who'd like to be able to connect, chat, have a conversation. I know that this is a difficult time to have a support group meeting because we're in the holiday season, so my guess is we're going to not have a lot of people who are going to have the opportunity to connect in. So let me give you the heads-up announcements here at the end of 2019 as really kickoffs to our new year, 2020. The first announcement that I want to make sure everybody hears about is that I do consultations throughout the year, but during the holiday season, I always like to discount the consultations 50%. and that's especially important for those of you who are members. If you are looking now here into the new year and you are thinking to yourself that you're still a bit undecided about the program that you want to embrace of recovery for 2020, which therapies should you embrace, which ones seem to be helping, which ones don't you know about that you want to learn more about, what is it that is causing your symptoms, and then what therapies would be most appropriate to address those causes? Those are the kinds of questions and issues that I discuss during these consultations. The point and the idea that I have for everybody is to have developed together with you a program of recovery that will enable you to succeed in celebrating a reversal of your symptoms. So you might have been a person that's already reported you are better or about the same, but the idea obviously is a year from now you're going to be able to report on the survey that you are indeed better, and you can tell us what therapies that you have found are really making a big difference. The answer about what therapies are going to help is one that really is very individualistic. It depends on what factors are problematic in your body, what are the factors that are causing your symptoms, and so the consultations are designed, as far as I'm concerned, to be able to give us time to discuss in some detail what's really going on, what are the factors, what kinds of approaches might be really useful for you, and then I sometimes have to do additional research to find the resources that are most useful and successful for you. So if you'd like to be able to have that type of support from me personally, be sure to sign up for the consultation. The discount is up through the 1st, which is only, of course, a couple of days from now. And I'm really delighted, happy, and honored to be able to provide the information that I have available on the dozens and dozens of natural therapies, and also some pretty good sense of the variety of factors that cause the symptoms associated with this diagnosis. So I'm happy to do these private consultations for you at this discount level. So it's only $75. And then just for your information, those contributions go to support all the free services that we offer here at Parkinson's Recovery, as do your membership fees of the $10 monthly subscriptions that we greatly appreciate. So discount consultations are up and available for the next couple of days. The next heads up that I want to make sure everybody knows about is that the interview that I did with Fred Phillips was really wonderful. It's posted on your radio show page here on the membership websites. Fred is a person I interviewed several years ago on Parkinson's Recovery Radio, and I was able to recruit him as a follow-up guest. He had some changes, some shifts, and most interestingly, Fred confronted some pretty serious health problems, wound up being hospitalized since I had last talked with him. The story is remarkable in the sense that if you listen to really what happened, he was really in a seriously challenged state, almost to the point of being seriously handicapped. And Fred, given who Fred is, he really just decided, okay, we're going to heal all of this, and that's exactly what happened. And so his story is really quite remarkable. I think he's an amazing resource for anybody who's looking for a role model, a mentor who succeeded in being able to address the symptoms that he experiences. So be sure to listen to that interview with Fred Phillips, who talks about his journey and talks about the kind of therapies that he pursues. As a footnote, I might also want to mention that if you listen to the answer to the question that I asked of Fred, well, what are you really doing to make a difference in terms of your health? Fred has a very serious daily regimen. He has a number of different activities that he honors and engages in. So recovery for Fred is certainly not passive. It's not a question of taking a pill or two or taking maybe 5 minutes out to do some kind of activity or even go to one single kind of therapist for whatever reason. No, Fred looks at recovery very seriously, and he has adopted and embraced a number of different approaches and methods and therapies and techniques that he does every day that make the big difference to him. So it's an inspiring interview, and I think it should encourage all of you to recognize that recovery really does take some effort on your part to be able to realize there is some energy and attention and effort that needs to be expended every day to be able to then look back and realize that you really are healing from the inside out. Other announcements are that as reflecting on what I wanted to do for my global audience over the year 2020, I decided that I first of all want to offer here in January and February one of the most successful and popular courses that I have ever offered. And the title of the course is Take a Giant Leap for Recovery in 14 Small Steps. We have 14 classes. They will be meeting on Saturdays and Sundays at noon Pacific Time, USA. And I love this class. We're talking about steps that you take yourself, you taking control over your recovery. So in that course, we're not talking about go to this therapy or buy this supplement or take this medicine or talk to your doctor about X. It really is all about recognizing there are some fundamental activities and approaches that you need to embrace that will enable you to really be able to have a sustained relief from your symptoms. So the course title is Take a Giant Leap for Recovery, but you don't do that by just taking one giant step. You do that by taking 14 tiny, small steps, steps that you can actually take. I love the course. And I think it's one of the most creative things I've ever actually done. You're not going to find anything like this anywhere else. And if you haven't had the course, I cordially and warmly invite you to register for it. We're starting the first course on January the 18th, Saturday at noon Pacific time. So the courses are going to meet on the weekends to be convenient to those of you who work. And so it will be on Saturdays and Sundays at 12 noon Pacific time beginning January the 18th. And again, we have a whole 7 weeks of material and content and suggestions and steps that I'm recommending that you take in order, again, to be able to heal from the inside out. It's a way that you can take control over your recovery program. Nobody else is in charge of what is going to make a difference but you. Now, the other, I think, exciting news that I have is I, of course, teach 7 or 8 different courses with different topics that I've developed over the last decade, and I have taken the content from a couple of the courses, and I have now transferred the content and the material over into 2 online course platforms. The first course is called What Really Matters. Some of you have taken that course. Now, the whole purpose and the intent of that course is to document the therapies, the natural therapies that people have reported to me in my various surveys and in my interviews and in my consultations are helping them to be able to heal. So I really have enjoyed developing that course platform and the content in that course. Now, if you have already had the What Really Matters course, you will see a full documentation of each of the therapies that we covered there in the course as they are rolled out over subsequent weeks. But I am posting new methods, new therapies on the course platform. So the What Really Matters course, we wound up covering 16 very separate and identifiable methods and therapies that were very different in character. But in the actual online course platform, I am including then many, many other therapies and methods that, again, have been reported to me are helping people to heal from the inside out. And we are also in that course platform, we are having the Q&A with me personally on a regular basis. So it's kind of like taking a course, but I think it'll be advantageous to quite a few individuals in the sense that you don't have to connect in live to a very specific class time. We'll be able to have our Q&As at different times so that you'll be able to connect in. And, of course, everything there is on the course platform so that you don't have to wait for the course to actually air live. You can connect into the course platform at any time and be able to take advantage of it. It's a slick platform. I have to tell everybody, I have to pay a lot to sustain that platform, you know, in order to be able to use it as a user. It, however, has a wonderful video interface. It has audios. It has this wonderful text platform, downloads. It's really wonderful. It's simple. And I can also provide the PDFs of the abstracts of the research that document why that therapy has been found to be useful for neurological symptoms. And more specifically, oftentimes we have research that has actually used persons diagnosed with Parkinson's as subjects. So the course, What Really Matters, is now an online platform. And again, you have some links to these courses that you can click in and get a little more information about them. The also course has a 7-day free trial, so I think that's important for everybody. You register for the course, and then you get a whole week to be able to scurry about, to get take advantage of the material that has been posted so far, and decide if that's something that you think would provide support for your journey down the road to recovery in 2020. And that's the first course. The second course that is now open and available that I just actually opened up this last week is a course, again, that I've taught before. It's called Rock Solid Walking. The emphasis in that course is in being able to provide all sorts of suggestions, methods, therapies, techniques, approaches that I have learned from my interviews, most of which are interviews with people who have Parkinson's symptoms and have invented ways of solving the challenges that they experience. So that's the real wisdom, I think, that is the winning set of ideas and suggestions for how you can reclaim walking that then becomes rock solid. So if you're having mobility challenges, be sure to check in and check out that particular course. I've got the tuition membership fees on a very low basis, so I want to make sure that that's not an impediment for anybody to be able to connect into those courses. And again, let me say that's, of course, a 7-day free trial, so you don't have to pay anything for 7 days. And if financial resources are a problem, my goodness, at least get in there for a week. You're going to find some wonderful ideas, very supportive suggestions, if in fact the walking and mobility has been a serious challenge for you now, or you expect that will be a challenge for you in the future. Now, if you have connected in here to our December support group gathering and would like to be able to have a connection with me, so that we can have a discussion about therapies maybe that you are considering as possibilities, or questions about research evidence on any aspect of natural therapies or approaches or factors that are causing the symptoms of Parkinson's, I'm here, and I really would like to be able to respond in whatever way I can respond that would hopefully be helpful. So what I want to do is now, as I'm waiting for any additional comments to be entered in there into our chat room or into our Q&A field, which is another way that you can actually enter comments or suggestions or some curiosities about where we might go with all of this, I want to now connect in with individuals who have called in. We have only actually one person so far who's called in, and I want to connect in and say, hi, what's up, and so we can have a conversation about whatever's up with you. And I believe it's Bill. Hello, Bill. Are you there?
Hey, Robert. How are you doing?
Hi. Well, I'm doing pretty well. Thank you very much, Bill. And how are you?
Happy holiday.
Thank you. Same to you.
I'm doing fine, really. I have a question for you that occurred to me that maybe, if it's okay, I could just ask you now about tremor.
Please. Yes, please.
When I was first diagnosed, I didn't have any tremor whatsoever, and for a couple of years I didn't have any tremor, and I'm gradually getting it now, and it comes and goes. It's not, I never have it for too long, but, and there's some cases when there's sort of an obvious reason for it, like the temperature is cold, I can bring it on, or obviously stress, or you're making an extra effort to do something, it will come on. But there's sometimes it just seems to come on for no reason that I can discern whatsoever. My question to you would be, have you heard or have you experienced other people telling you similar things? And do you have any idea why it would just come sort of out of the blue?
When you say that it comes out of the blue, you've already been able to acknowledge there's some precursors to some of the tremoring that you experience. So stress is an antecedent, and you can document that pretty clearly. Cold weather is also an antecedent. But then what you're saying is that there are certain circumstances where all of a sudden there it is, and you don't have any logical way of trying to figure out what might be the antecedent?
Exactly.
And I think that is very typical. Now, in terms of thinking about what might be going on, have you done any tracking of what you're eating?
No. Not in relation to that.
It may be actually a function of the specific food that you are eating, and that may be the actual trigger. As you know, Bill, I've been doing research on this topic for many, many years. It's now been a decade and a half. And I do have to honestly admit that I continue to refine and shift my understanding of the factors that cause these symptoms. I have come now more recently to an understanding of the influence of glucose as fuel for the brain relative to ketones. And I think you've had a little bit of experience with the ketone ester, and that wasn't too successful. But in the end, the issue may be that the tremoring is in fact influenced by the glucose that is being used by your body to fuel energy rather than the ketones, which are made naturally in the liver. That's not something you have to acquire as an external ester.
Right.
When I say then sugars or glucose, I think the really puzzling challenge of that is the following. When we eat a lot of carbs, and of course carbs can come from lots of different food sources, those carbs are converted into sugars and glucose. And when we eat big supplies of protein in the form of meat, for example, that again is converted into glucose. So in the end, it's not just a question of saying, well, you've got to cut out all sweets, all sugars. Well, that's really a very small part of what winds up being the source of sugar in the body that converts to glucose that, again, is the fuel for the brain and the body. It's really a question of realizing that a balance is really what is required. Another kind of idea that I'm sure you've probably heard me discuss from one place or another is the possibility of the overnight fast, which is a fancy word of saying that you don't eat anything from the last meal in the evening until the next meal in the morning. So for about 12 to 14 hours, there's no food that is taken in. Is that a regular kind of an event for you in terms of your own eating habits, or is it the case that you don't do that much fasting overnight?
The latter, really. I don't like to eat a lot at one time, but I eat lots of sort of small snack-like meals over the day. And sometimes I will. I know it's not great to eat late at night, but sometimes, you know, I do. And I could try and be more strict about that. That's a good idea, to see if that has any effect on the issue.
Do it as an experiment. And let me tell you, like you, I like to kind of snack late at night, like nuts. I'm almost addicted.
Yeah.
But, oh, good, we'll have a few nuts here late at night. So I really, believe me, empathize with that sort of routine habit. And, of course, if, in fact, you really love still and want to continue to snack at night, and the small meals during the day are a wonderful idea, well, you might think about trying to delay the morning meal or breakfast as much as possible, because all you really need is about 12 or 14 hours gap where you're not eating anything. And so what you want is for your liver to make the ketones, and the liver is going to get busy doing that when you're sleeping or any time when you're not eating. because it's drawing from the fat that's stored in the tissues of the body, and then it takes that fatty tissue and it converts the fat into the ketones, and then, of course, the ketones are automatically sent to the brain. So one possibility of the source of the intermittent tremors that you cannot explain, you've got some explanations for the other reasons for the tremor, great, but you don't have an explanation for some of what actually happens, you might just start trying to track the antecedent that might be the source of the food that you're eating. And, of course, this might be a good holiday season to do that. I don't know if this is the case in your family, but it's a little hard to avoid exposure to lots of sweets during the holiday season. You know, they're just, I don't know, it's something about what we do. It's like, oh, good, we'll have a celebration of a special cake from, you know, Aunt Sally or Grandma Maud's wonderful brownie cookies or whatever it is. And, of course, that enticement is a little hard to reject because we've always eaten that on the holiday season. It's comfort food. It's emotional support. And so you want to do that. What you might want to do is just track it. And so if you do have any sweets, even if it's just one cookie, you might want to track it and just see whether or not there is any result from that in the form of some tremoring.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I've stayed away from gluten for a long time. I try and avoid carbs as much as possible. But this intermittent fasting thing, I have trouble with because I don't like to go to bed hungry, so to speak. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, maybe adjust it. You know, go ahead and do the same thing that you've been doing, which is eating later at night, but then just see if you can't delay the morning meal a bit. Another possibility for you is the following. One of the factors that create tremoring is the thinning of the myelin sheath around the neurons. That's what the insulation is around the neurons. So the body is an electrical entity. You know, we've got all kind of electricity running through everywhere, so we have to have some insulation. Otherwise, we would be going crazy. We would be sparking out electricity no matter where we went or what we felt or what we did. So we have to have some insulation. That insulation comes from these fatty coverings of our neural networks. But what happens over time is that there's some thinning in those for various reasons. Sometimes it's toxic exposure. Sometimes it's some viruses or infections, which we all are exposed to. So one other kind of adjustment that you might want to consider making in your food regimen might be in the morning, the meal that you might want to eat would be something like this coffee cocktail that Bill Curtis recommends. And that's coffee, but it's also got a lot of fat in it.
Right.
It's got, I don't know if you're familiar with his little recipe, and you can alter the recipe, but the point is it's coffee, plus he's putting in some really high-fat substances, and it's a little unbelievable to see what he uses in his coffee cocktail, but it's like butter, some really rich butter. Of course, that's dairy, and that's not recommended for people with Parkinson's symptoms, but that's what he does. He does whipped cream. Again, that's dairy and not such a great idea, but again, it seems to work for him. And then there's MCT oil. That's also a very high fat substance. And so you might be able to find some fatty kind of natural foods that you can slip into that coffee cocktail. And so the first thing that you could do in the morning is to do the coffee cocktail rather than eating anything and see if that might, again, the advantage of having some fat as your diet is that you're giving also your body a little bit of extra opportunity to put some insulation on those myelin sheaths. So when the insulation thins, the electrical circuits begin to short circuit, and that's, of course, what begins to cause the tremoring.
It's weird to me because so many people have told me that the first symptom that they had kind of warned them about that Parkinson's was coming on was the tremor of usually in the hand or in a finger or something small, and other symptoms develop later on. I seem to have gone about it backwards.
Well,
I had balance issues at the beginning, and then the tremor only has come on recently.
Well, you know, there actually is a split in terms of the symptoms that people experience for the most part. Some people have everything. For example, if you listen to Fred Phillips' interview, he really experiences just about every symptom that's ever been documented for Parkinson's, and that's a very long list. But a lot of people, they split into two groups, and the first group is the shaking group, and the other group winds up being the group that is more movement challenges.
Right.
And so the folks with movement challenges oftentimes don't have many challenges with tremoring, and vice versa, those with the tremors don't sometimes have as many challenges with movement. So there are two groups that have been documented. And again, remember, the diagnosis of Parkinson's is what we call a garbage can diagnosis, so there are lots of factors that actually cause that. The interesting interview that I did with the microbiotic dietitian guru, Warren Kramer, was that in his work with people experiencing Parkinson's symptoms, he has come to the very strong conclusion that given that there are those two different types of symptoms that are found for persons who experience Parkinson's, that the folks that have the movement challenges tend to have diets that have too much sugar. So the movement challenges wind up being addressed dietarily by reducing the intake of sugar. And then the people with the tremoring, what he is saying is that the dietary contribution to the tremors or winds up being the contribution of way too much proteins and meat. So people who eat too much of that wind up having the problem with the tremors. I thought that was an interesting observation. I've not heard that expressed by anyone else, but Warren has had 30 years' experience in working with people with these symptoms, and so a lot of adjustments in diets. And what he's found is when he adjusts the diets, just like I have described, he finds that people experience some much welcome relief from the symptoms that they do experience.
So he associates tremoring with too high a protein.
Too much meat. And what he's saying is cut down on the meat for sure. And if you can, well, he's pretty extreme, actually. He says no meat at all. And if you do any meat or any of that kind of food, you know, do the wild fish, but not the shellfish. He's pretty restrictive. I mean, he's a microbiotic dietitian. And so he's more into the plant-based kind of diet than he is into the animal diet. So he's pretty extreme. I kind of interpreted that to think that, well, I think the key would be if a person is having a lot of tremoring, then reducing the intake of meat at least might provide some welcome relief.
That's interesting.
It is interesting.
I remember.
And so we don't have any research on that, Bill. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I can't then point to you with this wonderful study of 1,000 subjects. Guess what? Significantly, we found we don't have anything like that. But, no, I think in terms of the wisdom of the centuries, when you're talking to somebody like Warren Kramer, you're getting some really rich insights you're not going to get from anywhere else because this is what he's done. He's done food as medicine for people for 30 years. And he's worked with a lot of people with these symptoms. And so this is what has been his revelation through, really, I think, his own experimentation. So I kind of take his recommendation seriously. And I think it's worth for anybody that experiences these symptoms to do a little experiment on themselves. So if a person is having that specific symptom, then adjust your diet and see if you don't see a relief from the symptoms. And in the end, as I said, I've changed the kind of thinking I have for how to help people with these symptoms over the years. I find that I'm really gravitating more and more to food as the solution. Food, which is a pretty simple idea, but I think if you think of diet as the key, or the kingpin, I should say, I think you can get a lot of mileage out of food and eating the right food. And even one of the interesting interviews that I had on Parkinson's Recovery Radio, perhaps one of the most interesting interviews, was with individual researcher Bill McAnally. And Bill is a person who actually was able, through his genetic research and through actually doing the other research studies that have been published, found that one of the reasons why we have chronic conditions like Parkinson's is we actually cannot even get access to the foods that the body needs to heal. And the big picture is that the foods that he finds through his genetic testing of skeletons of people who died, so they can do analyses and find out what foods people ate who lived long, healthy lives, and what foods people ate who wound up being ill and diseased, he discovered that overall what you find is that we're missing in our diets today the bitter foods, the bitter roots. So what happened in our society, we call ourselves advanced, and I'm beginning to think we're not so advanced, is that we've now sweetened everything. You know, you just go to a grocery store and look at the ingredients of anything that's packaged, and you're going to always find some entry of some kind of sugar product. Well, what Bill is saying is that we've sweetened up all of the food and we've lost those bitter foods. And so what he's done in his own research is identify the sources of all of these bitter roots, which, as it turns out, oftentimes are not found in our more, quote, advanced societies, like Western societies, but more in some of these third world countries or under or undeveloped countries where they still grow these roots, where you still can actually obtain them. So he's gone out and he's acquired these foods, these roots, these bitter roots, and he's formulated all these kind of products that then supplement the body with the food that it needs to be able to heal at the cellular level. Now, that's interesting, and it leads me to believe that, yeah, I think food probably is the answer. And if it's the case that we can't actually get access to the foods that we need to heal our bodies, then we have to figure out ways to be able to get access to that so that then we can consider food as medicine rather than as food as something that takes us from one day to the next with the energy that we need to lead our lives.
Right. Well, everybody who's alive has to eat to survive, and so we're all taking in food, and the choices we make for good or for ill are affecting us. So that's a big factor, whether you're sick or healthy or somewhere in between.
Oh, I think it is. And I notice a huge difference in how I feel as a function of what I eat. I mean, it's huge, absolutely huge.
Yeah.
So I think if people become more attentive to what they're eating, I think they'll be able to actually connect a lot of the symptoms that they experience with the food that they eat. And then, of course, we often times have these excuses like, well, it's just a brownie and my mother made that. I've got to eat that. Well, that may be true, but when you eat the brownie, if it has sugar in it, you will pay the consequence. That, you know, especially if a person who has Parkinson's symptoms. So it's all a choice, and it's not as if we're all going to be Puritans and eat everything that's perfect for our bodies. That's not going to be the case. But I think in the end, what I'm saying is I think if people were more attentive to exactly what they were eating, and rather than making excuses and then documenting how they were feeling, they would be able to begin to recognize the resultant impact of what they ate. And, of course, there's no magic way of understanding what's happening. A lot of the dietitians will recommend to people, oh, you really have to eat the greens, the leafy greens. Well, yes, that's right in the sense that those leafy greens have a lot of vitamins and minerals that the body needs. But wait a minute, what if a body, what if an individual or a person has an allergic reaction to the folates in those types of foods? You have a folate sensitivity. And so there's no one great grand formula that can be used by everybody to get well. I think everybody has to realize that they have a unique body and, you know, really begin to monitor, watch what they're eating, and then see how they feel. And if they feel good, great, they're eating the right food. But if they begin to all of a sudden feel tired or their symptoms all of a sudden begin to be more pronounced, then, okay, wait a minute, let's look back and see what we ate. Maybe we need to alter that. And, of course, if you really look to see what you ate, it may be there was a little bit of wheat in something that you ate, and the wheat was genetically modified. So what you really were getting was genetically modified food that you may be seriously having a reaction to. So it may be something very small that's causing a very big problem.
Right. Well, so far as tremor is concerned, one thing that was helpful to me was Bill Coleman's idea, the Australian guy I know you're familiar with, who said essentially, my reading of it was, don't worry about tremor. It'll take care of, you know, work on your attitude and other things, and the tremor will take care of itself. And I think he's right.
And that's such a wonderful perspective. I love that idea from John. And another way to think about tremoring, to really embrace the fact that the body is really doing its own work to heal, is the following. If you think of tremoring not as a problem, but as a healing activity, what really is also happening is we all have stress and traumas that are embedded at the cellular level. Well, the shaking is one of the ways that the body has of releasing all of that. So it's a natural response of the body. And as we go through our lives, particularly it seems like just in these last few years, there's a lot of stresses out there. My goodness gracious. A lot of pretty horrible events that are occurring that are stressful. So how do we release those stresses? How do we let them go? Well, the natural way that the body uses is to shake, rattle, and roll. We tremor. That's what animals do, and that's what people can do, too, to release all of the stresses that we're exposed to. Just watching a television news program where there is some awful travesty, I see now almost every day when I read the headlines, some awful event that's happened somewhere that's really unbelievable. Well, that's stressful. We're seeing that. We're hearing that. We're thinking, oh, my God, that's absolutely horrible. Well, we've been exposed to a little trauma in our lives, although that's not personally affecting us. Well, how do we release that? How do we let that go? How do we not think about that for the next week or month or year? And the way the body has of doing that is it shakes, it tremors. So one of the ways that you can think about following up on John's suggestion is, well, don't worry about the tremors. And what I'm saying is, well, that's right. Don't worry about it and thank your body for doing that because it's just a natural healing response. So one of the ideas that I've heard now from a number of different members of my audience is really quite wonderful. What people will tell me when I ask, well, what do you do about your tremors? How do you calm them down? The answer is, oh, well, what I do is I let them go as wild and crazy as they need to. And they'll say, yeah, all of a sudden I find if I try to stop it or, you know, somehow hold it and tame it down and force it not to express itself, then it seems to really get even worse. But if I just allow the tremor to do what it needs to do without any attempt to calm it down, it will get worse for a while, sometimes a very short while, and then what people will tell me is, and all of a sudden the tremor is just all of a sudden calmed down. It's not a problem anymore. So in a way, if you begin to experience the tremor, instead of thinking, oh my God, this is horrible, is this going to get worse, am I going to be experiencing tremors for the rest of our life, the thought that you can have is, oh great, I know I've had a stressful week or stressful day, or I just have been really stressed by hearing the story on the news, and my body is now having the appropriate response. So, okay, body, do what you need to do. Just let the tremor happen. Let it, you know, again, I use the words rock, rattle, and roll. I mean, just, you know, vibrate as much as necessary to release. And so the release happens, and then you're able to then come back to a place of centeredness and balance.
I'll give that a try. That's an excellent suggestion.
Yeah. Instead of judging it, you know, instead of saying, oh, my goodness, this is awful, and what are people going to think? No, you just say, no, okay, this is what needs to happen, and let
yeah,
go.
I think it's
and then the other
acceptable.
Thing to, and the other thing to remember, you know, if you begin to really look at what's happening out there in the world, as you make a pass through the world and you think to yourself, well, I'm really judging myself because here I am. I'm not a 20-year-old anymore. And look, I've got this neurological challenge. Well, let me tell you, Bill, begin to look around the world. And what I've noticed is there are an alarming number of young people. We're talking teenagers and people in their 20s and sometimes 30s who have some pretty serious tremoring problems. You know, just look around. I mean, just at strangers. And I've noticed clerks in stores who are, I mean, it looks like they just got out of high school and they have these really troubling tremors. So I think that's a way of just realizing those judgments are just really pretty silly. We can all be exposed to the sources that are causing tremors. And sometimes that's the cell phones or the electromagnetic pollution that we just are, you know, really are getting way, way too many of those toxins, and that's creating the tremors as well.
I think you're right about that as well.
Yeah, there's so many factors. we have a lot of assaults out there, so you kind of have to think through, well, which ones are causing me the most problems, and, you know, we try to insulate
right.
ourselves from those. So,
listen, I'm excited you interviewed Fred Phillips again. I think he's absolutely great.
I agree. He's an amazing man, absolutely amazing. And be sure you listen to his interview, as I said earlier on here in our gathering together, because if you really look at the challenges that he confronted, he had some health challenges that were very serious, and then his symptoms just exploded. I think most people would experience that, and they would kind of conclude, oh, well, my gosh, this is it. This is the end. I'm going to give up. But that's the last thing he did. He said, okay, well, the body can heal, so we'll just have to get to work and make sure to, you know, support what it needs. And that's exactly what he did. It's just a wonderful story. It really is.
Yeah, it's very inspirational. He's a strong spirit, and he doesn't give up. And that's an example for everybody else.
It is. And, you know, when you're really on the journey to the road to recovery, what I've noticed is it's rocky. People will get better for a while, and then all of a sudden the feeling is, okay, I've done it, it's done. And then all of a sudden there's a regression, and they have some more troubling symptoms. And so it's an easy way to say, oh, no, this is never going to succeed. I might as well give up. But Fred's a wonderful mentor to all of us, who basically is somebody who says, look, I don't care what you're experiencing. The body is just able to return back to its natural state of healing. So just let it work. Let it do. Give it the support that it needs, and it'll make it happen for you. And so it's quite a motivational story, I think.
Yeah, I agree. He's very honest in what he relates about his own experience, and I really like that about him too.
Oh, I do too. I do too. An amazing person. Well, it's right there posted on the member teleseminar.
That's great that you did a second go around with him, because I think he's a super valuable resource for anybody.
I do. I do too. And for those of you listening who may not know him, he does have some books, and he's got a wonderful website. He does blog and writing at least once every week or every 2 weeks. So he's got some wonderful posts and some inspirational commentaries on his own journey. So be sure to check into his blog as well.
Exactly. All right, well, thank you so much, Robert. I hope you have a wonderful 2020 and beyond.
Thank you, Bill, and the same to you. Many blessings. And I'm looking to see on our control panel, we don't have anyone else who's actually called in to our support group gathering today. And I'm checking our Q&A field to see if we've got anybody who's connected in there in our chat room. And we don't have anybody who's connected into the chat room. As I said at the outset of our gathering today, I know this is the holiday season, and I'm well aware that many people are responsible for other family duties and work duties and parties and gatherings, and I figured that we wouldn't have a big attendance today. And conclusion, we did start this gathering a little bit early today. I have to do an interview for a Brain Summit, which has been scheduled here for today at this very same time. So I've got to disconnect from this and be able to get that interview ongoing. You'll see some announcements about that. We've got some really wonderful presenters on this Brain Summit. It's one of those deals where they're going to put all this up for free for, you know, a week or two, which is really quite wonderful. So you'll be able to get all this wonderful support and these wonderful ideas from people who have been doing a lot of their own discovery and research about what affects the ability of the brain to function as it was designed to function. Well, thanks so much for being a part here of our December support group gathering, and thank you so much for your support of Parkinson's recovery. And as you well know, that is what's happening here on the shores of the Puget Sound, where all the women are smart, all the men are handsome, and all of the children are profoundly loved. Know that by virtue of the fact that you have committed to become a member of Parkinson's Recovery, that you are connecting into our member websites, that in your own way, in your own fashion, in your own time, and using your best instincts and your own wisdom, that you indeed are traveling down the road to recovery, and that journey has been a successful journey for you. So celebrate that as we now move into the new year of 2020. I look forward to connecting with each of you the last Monday of January at 12 noon Pacific time.